And welcome into the Wednesday edition of Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Michelle Knezovic here with you on this Wednesday morning. Hope everybody's doing well. Joe Rex Road, good morning. You're looking spiffy this morning. How are you?
Thanks. Put on a shirt today.
Attaboy.
Yeah.
Way to go.
I don't know why, but every once in a while I do that.
Every once in a while. Tomorrow, back to the, you know, there's the ESPN body edition. Tomorrow, the Robbie and Rexroad body edition with Joe Rexroad. Looking forward to it.
Maybe. I mean, we've been cut down to 3 hours. Doesn't mean we can't be sexy.
Yeah, it doesn't mean it. Doesn't mean that at all. Michelle Knezovic, good morning. How are you doing?
Good morning, guys. I put a sweatshirt on this morning and then spilled coffee all over
it. Oh, good.
So, happy Wednesday, Nashville.
That's a great start.
Oh, there, man. I'm sorry about that.
Oh, boy.
How much coffee?
Listen, I'm more mad that I spilled the coffee
than
the sweatshirt.
Well,
dirty.
That's what I was gonna say.
Yeah.
Like, it's about the lost. You know, it's about the lost coffee, not the stain.
I don't know, like probably two shots.
Oh well, all right, you're okay.
Still less than I need.
Yeah.
Well, it's all right. To better days, to better times, as we move forward. We'll have Paul Kaharsky on the show today at 8 o'clock. I know he missed Joe Rex Road immensely last week, so. Joe, I know you're looking forward to this coming up at 8 o'clock.
Yeah, well, see, I mean, I'm sure he was taking shots at me, right?
Not really. He was okay. He behaved himself reasonably.
Yeah.
We talked about at the beginning of the segment how maybe you were dodging him a little bit that day.
Yeah, well, you know, I think it's the exact opposite. I think it's the exact other way around, but we'll go head-to-head today.
We will. Looking forward to that coming up at 8 o'clock. The Predators get another win last night, and not only do they get another win, another impressive performance offensively for the Predators last night. So you're talking about on Friday, they go into Anaheim. They score 6 goals. Now, granted, it's Anaheim, so keep that in mind. The next day, on the second half of back-to-back, you score 4 against Vegas. Philip Forsberg has 3 of them. And then last night, you put up 6 again against the Montreal Canadiens. And really, from the jump last night, a good performance by the Predators. Cody Glass, Colton Sissons, Matthias Ekholm, Roman Josi, Matt Duchene, and Tommy Novak, the goal scorers for the Predators last night. And, you know, I realize that you do have to keep in mind who the opponents have been lately. I mean, you're talking about the two games where you hung up 6. It's Montreal and Anaheim, and those teams are terrible. So I understand that. But, you know, a few weeks ago, it didn't really matter who the Predators were playing. They weren't scoring goals against anybody. And I do think you can see that the offense, at least to some degree, looks better than it has really at any point so far this season. Can they keep that up? I'm not sure. The power play looks a little bit better right now than it has lately as well. So I think some things to be encouraged about, particularly offensively from the Predators over the course of the past couple of weeks.
Yeah, I mean, there's been stretches this season when I'm not sure they could have scored 4 goals on air.
Correct. You
know, in 60 minutes of hockey. So, yeah, I think it's about, you know, individuals finishing, and just it's about executing. You know, yes, the Canadians are bad, just like the Ducks, but you get 6 goals last night with nothing from Forsberg, which is another thing too. You know, you're not totally dependent. You're not Forsberg dependent completely. And no, I think I think Forsberg, and now Duchene scores last night. Thank you, picked a click.
Yeah,
but it's those two that you really need to. Be more consistent, be more like last season.
You do, and Cody Glass continuing to play well. He gets the redirection goal last night that was pretty close to being a high stick, but
I still think it was.
It wasn't, but it was pretty close.
I mean, I even read they put it out there. My gosh, it was close.
It was real close. And first off, that could get me started into a whole different thing. Like, unless you're hitting somebody in the face, the goal should count.
No,
I've always talked about this before. Like, that. Anything other than picking the puck up with your glove and throwing it in the net, I'm pretty much cool with. Like, when the kicking it in the net, I'm like, okay, yeah, cool. Kick it in the net. I don't care.
Wow.
That's just me.
Okay. I'm not with you on the kicking, but yeah, I mean, I hear you. I hear what you're saying.
Just if you want more offense, there's ways to do it.
Yeah.
But Cody Glass, nonetheless, he scores last night. He continues to play well in the role that he's in. You know, I really like that line that he's on with Granlund and Niederreiter. I like what they're doing out there together. You know, Colton Sissons, I've said this before, I don't think anybody's ever going to, you know, confuse Colton Sissons for Alex Ovechkin out there. But He has come alive a little bit offensively since he's played with Philip Forsberg, which it's amazing how that'll happen.
How about that?
He scored a couple of times, scored a nice goal against Anaheim, and then scores last night as well. So, look, I don't know long term. I mean, they've got the lines kind of jumbled up right now, and it's working at the moment. Is it going to work long term? I'm not sure. But right now, they're getting the results they're looking for.
And you mentioned Ekholm that – yesterday we had an Ekholm trade rumor.
We saw that. Yeah.
So, so that's typically like the time of year when the Preds start playing really well.
Yes,
and
it is.
Like, that's all it takes. It takes a little bit of an Ekholm trade rumor and get rolling.
Yeah, I think it was Frank Saravalli.
Saravalli.
Yeah. That the I guess the Predators could be open to trading Matthias Ekholm. I was like, man, we are back to 2 years ago.
That was fast. Yeah. Well.
It's what happens when you have the start of the season that they've had.
Yeah. In seriousness, he doesn't have that much term. It's not that much money.
Right.
He's a good player. I mean, he was really attractive, I think, before, right?
Correct.
Would he fetch a good return right now?
I mean, I don't think he'd get the same thing you would have got for him a couple years ago. I mean,
I agree.
He's gotten older. He's still a good player, as you said. I don't know that he's as good as he was a couple of years ago, but he's still a good player. I mean, another thing that Saravalli mentioned in that piece was, and he didn't report anything on this, he just kind of threw out the question, could Ryan McDonagh be available if the Predators don't find themselves back in the playoff picture by the trade deadline? And I was sitting there thinking about all that. First off, I agree with you. Like, Ekholm doesn't cost a ton of money, but it is, significant chunk of money. Like, how many people have cap space for those two guys would be my question.
Right, exactly. How important, I guess it's just a matter of, like, if you think he's perfect, like, that's exactly what you need, And it's obviously not just a rental, then maybe. But, the McDonagh thing surprised me. I'm like, really? But that's the thing. It's like, are they really going to be – they're not going to be miles out where there's no chance, right?
No.
I would bet you they won't be. I would bet you – I bet you they're not going to be in the playoffs, but I bet you they're going to be close enough by the trading deadline that it'll be like, well, stay the course.
Well,
bye.
Yeah, like my best guess is – If I had to put my guess on it, by the time the NHL trade deadline comes around, where they'd be in the standings, I'd say probably just about where they are right now, and maybe a little higher, maybe like right on the edge of the playoffs. And then that's where it gets hard, right? I mean, right now they're at 38 points. They've only played 36 games. Edmonton is holding down the last spot in the playoffs right now with 42 points, but they've played three more games than the Predators have. I mean, right now, Colorado's not in the playoffs, and we know with McKinnon coming back that's going to change, I think. I mean, I think they're going to probably go on a run at some point. So, there's a lot that's going to probably look a little bit different. I mean, Seattle starting to come back to earth a little bit based on where they were to start the season. Edmonton, Calgary. Edmonton I can't figure out for me just because those two guys are so good with McDavid and Draisaitl that they just carry them. And then you look at them where they are in the standings and you're like, how is it possible that you get that type of performance out of those two guys on pretty much a nightly basis and they're right on the playoff line?
It is amazing.
Makes no sense to me.
No.
If you're talking about guys like McDavid and Draisaitl are both going to end up, if they stay healthy, are both going to end up around like 130 points, 135 points, and you got right on the playoff line with those two. It makes no sense to me.
It's bizarre. But they are the thing about Edmonton is they're every year the team that, like, when you say just get in, that's you're talking about them, right? Because, like, they're just and we have seen them go on run. So, but, no, I'm with you. I mean, the Preds are 11th right now. But, like you said, they've got games in hand on quite a few of the teams ahead of them, and some of those teams not much ahead of them. I mean, the Blues, have one more point. Preds have two games in hand on them. So, yeah, like they're not going to be just miles out of it when the trading deadline comes. I don't see Poile doing something like that.
Yeah. I mean,
until he actually does it, I don't see it.
Yeah. I mean, look, that's absolutely a fair point to make. It is mind-boggling. I'm looking at these standings right now. And, you know, like, I do put some stock in the goal differential. Usually that's a stat that can tell you something at least. And the Predators are minus 10 right now. Blues are at minus 20. And then I look down here at the bottom. The Blackhawks are at minus 61, and the Ducks are at minus 70.
That's juicy.
You know how hard it is to be at minus 70 in goal differential 38 games into the year?
That is amazing. I mean, the Canadiens are minus 41, so not bad.
No, not bad.
And the Preds helped them out last night. But, no, and the thing is, the Blackhawks had a great start, and they're minus 61.
They have embraced the tank as the season has gone on. So another win
bleep
for the Predators.
The bed for Bedard.
That's true. Another win for the Predators last night. They'll begin a five-game road trip later this week as they take on Carolina on Thursday and the Washington Capitals on Friday in a back-to-back. So that's a heck of a back-to-back set for the Predators as they begin their five-game road trip coming up a little bit later this week. Coming up next, we'll get into the Tennessee Titans. And Joe was at the Titans facility yesterday, and obviously the topic of conversation, in addition to the Titans and Jags game, was also the status of DeMar Hamlin and the reaction from Titans coaches and Titans players to that incident on Monday Night Football. We'll discuss that coming up next. But first, Michelle Knezovic has a word from Superbook Sportsbook.
Yes, thank you, Robbie. Speaking of the Tennessee Titans, they're fighting for the AFC South this weekend in Jacksonville. Jacksonville is a 6.5-point favorite. But listen, I am going to take the Tennessee Titans plus the 6.5, but I'm also going to take the Jags on the money line. And Superbook Sports wants to help you with your New Year's resolutions this 2023. Help you win money with Superbook Sports. I think everybody would like that resolution. Superbook has over 3 decades of sports wagering experience in Las Vegas, so you get the best odds boost anywhere as you head into the football playoffs. Plus, check out their special odds boosts and promotions at Superbook.com. Make 2023 the year when you win money with Vegas. Download the Superbook Sportsbook app and place your bets today. Visit Superbook.com for terms and conditions. Gambling problem, call
1-800-889-9789. Hey, difficult day, obviously, for the players and the coaches and the NFL and our fans and anybody that's, even knows the NFL. So obviously we want to, on behalf of the Titans organization, our players and everybody involved, send our deepest sympathies and our concerns and our prayers to DeMar, who, by all accounts is fighting his tail off in Cincinnati. To his family who watched that unfold, in front of their eyes. To DeMar's football family in Buffalo and Pittsburgh, those teammates. And, we have one of those guys, Rashad Weaver, was a teammate of his. So, doing everything we can just to continue to support him and sending out, obviously our thoughts to everybody involved. And, just commend Zach and Sean for their leadership that they showed last night, for the example that they showed. Really in awe of the players on both sides, Buffalo and Cincinnati, the way that they supported each other was amazing to see. We all watch these games differently. Fans watch them at home or a bar, or coaches in this league watch them as they're working and the game's on in the background. So we were all affected differently, but we just send our condolences and really just the respect that we have for everybody involved and wish nothing but the best for DeMar.
That was Mike Vrabel, head coach of the Tennessee Titans, yesterday at Titans practice, discussing the situation with DeMar Hamlin. Obviously, Joe, we spent a lot of time yesterday discussing what happened with DeMar Hamlin on Monday Night Football, continuing to pray for and hope for the best for he and his family as this process continues on now with him remaining at UC Medical Center in Cincinnati. And as we've talked about all week for the last couple of days at this point, any updates that we get, we will pass along when and if those are made available to us. I thought some poignant words from Vrabel there. You had a quote that you tweeted out from Vrabel yesterday, just talking about the players and coaches and the conversations they had about the DeMar Hamlin situation yesterday morning, and the quote that you put out there was, quote, they understand the severity of this, they understand the game and what we love, and sometimes the things that you love the most and can give you the most can also take the most away. I thought a pretty poignant quote from Vrabel there.
Yeah, for sure. And he also later, you know, Teresa Walker asked him something, and he had an interesting kind of response on, you know, and I totally know what he's talking about. It's like, you know, think about like parents, grandparents, like when you're at your kid's game, you're not watching the game, you're just watching your kid, you know, you're just watching your kid, whatever your kid's doing, whatever sport it is. And, you know, it's kind of from the parent perspective, and then obviously that happens, and man, it's obviously heavy stuff. They had a conversation with the team, and it sounds like a lot of it was Vrabel, and some of it, like talking to Byard, was kind of like, this is another reminder, like, you know, tell the people you love that you love them and things like that. I mean, Kevin, you know, Byard, of course, lost his mom not long ago to cardiac arrest, you know, and then some, the players kind of almost just like a, you know, just everybody just say your piece, say whatever's on your mind kind of session, you know, going into the day. So, I mean, it's got to be, I mean, yeah, look, I mean, these guys are grinding to try to win the division this week, and it's a huge week. It's the biggest game of the year. It is a critical week of work, you know, and yet, of course, everyone in this league is going to be affected by this. Of course they are. And we saw that firsthand with Rashad Weaver yesterday.
Yeah, no question about it. And Kevin Byard, as he typically does, just very, very good, very expansive on pretty much any topic that you want to discuss with Kevin Byard. But he addressed the DeMar Hamlin situation yesterday at Titans practice as well. Here's what Titan safety Kevin Byard had to say.
What's been going through your mind? I saw your tweet last night, but I mean, just Rashad, obviously it's his friend, but you're big takeaway from that in this locker room?
I mean, just understand that life is precious and that, you know, you just never know, you know. Obviously, this is a dangerous sport, and I think we all kind of understand it, but nobody goes into a game thinking they can lose their life, you know. My mom went into cardiac arrest when she passed away, so I understand the seriousness of the situation. Him being in critical condition, he's fighting for his life, literally. So, yeah, just a tough deal, and my thoughts and prayers are with his family and his loved ones. But, yeah, I just think that last night, I'm just really reflecting on, you know, it's kind of cliche, but people say, you know, when something happens, hey, make sure you call your loved ones and things like that. Like, that's real. Like, because like I said, you just never know in this life when the Most High, you know, will call you back.
Were you watching with your family, and does that make it even more numbing, maybe?
I was actually watching the game. We was chilling at the house, and I was watching the game with my man cave, whatever. But I didn't even see the actual tackle. I was kind of moving around. And obviously, you know, you see a guy down, and it's like, you're like, okay, who's hurt? Okay, he's hurt or whatever. And then they go on TV break, and they come back, and he's still on the ground, and you see, you know, the team surrounding him. You think, like, well, this is serious. But more often than not, you think, like, this probably was like a concussion, or they put him on a stretcher or something. But as they kept going back and forth, I'm like, nah, this is serious. And then you start to see faces on some of the teammates, right? If it was Tre'Davious White, you see Stephon Diggs, you see the quarterbacks talking or whatever, and then they start making reports that they're performing CPR, and I'm like, whoa, like this is crazy. Like, I've never seen anything like this in a football game at all. And I would just think about, you know, what are the players thinking? Like, I know for a fact they probably didn't. I mean, they was right to cancel the game, because I don't know how anybody can line back up and go out here and play this sport when their brother is down fighting for their life. So, yeah, it's just a tough deal.
How much respect do you have for the coach? Because it seemed like they came together and they were like, no, we're not doing it.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of respect. And I also seen something that was like some of the NFLPA reps on the team when they got into the locker room pretty much said, hey, you know, we need to go ahead and cancel this game. So, a lot of respect for those guys. And, yeah, because like I said, once it gets to that point, like, this is bigger than football. Like, the NFL finds all different type of ways to delay games, especially we learned that during COVID year to be able to adjust. So, something like this that's really unprecedented, you got to just cancel and just, you know, think about his family and think about him. And then we'll find a way to, you know, to if they play the game at a later moment, if they don't.
So that was Kevin Byard yesterday at Titans practice. And as you would expect, some pretty poignant words from him as well.
Yeah, and I asked him also, like, is there any – have you guys talked at all in this locker room about, you know, talking about not playing, you know? And he Do you feel like there's going to be any momentum for that around the league? And basically, he's like, I know here, and it doesn't. He's like, keep an open mind. Like, well, I mean, who knows? But I don't think that, you know. I mean, the NFL's put out like this week's schedule is what it is, and you know. So, I mean, I think the show is going on now. Also, on the DeMar Hamlin front, and Cam Wolf, friend of the show, and others, you know, talking to DeMar's uncle. Yeah, not a doctor, although I sometimes play one on this show.
Yeah.
But down to 50% oxygen is, I mean, that's a positive sign. I know it's a positive sign. How much of a positive sign? I don't know. I mean, I've seen, like, Andrew Brandt went on Twitter and was like, only doctors reply here. What does this mean?
Right.
And a whole bunch of people who weren't doctors, like, replied. And
of course.
Yeah. But, I mean, I think it's certainly a positive thing if you're intubated and you have less oxygen. And I think it's like, if it's 50%, I think 40% basically is like now you're start, like you can breathe on your own. So there are positive signs. So hopefully today there's more of that.
Yep. Cam Wolf tweeted, I think last night, just spoke with Dorian Glenn, DeMar Hamlin's uncle, who said his nephew is on a ventilator, but he's improved to 50% oxygen needed after being at 100%. He's still sedated, but main focus is recovering to breathe on his own and healing the lungs. This is from Cam Wolf last night. It's like you said, I mean, at one point, he was at 100% oxygen reliance and now down to 50. I mean, I would have to view that as positive. What that ultimately means, I don't know. But that's, I think, a positive development on the DeMar Hamlin front. So continuing to hope for some good news there today as today goes on here.
Yeah, it's a positive development in terms of his breathing and being able to get there. The question will still remain the time the oxygen was cut off to his brain. What did that do, if anything?
Right.
I mean, that's a question no one can answer right now.
Yeah, no question about it. And, you know, obviously an emotional day. You brought up Rashad Weaver. They were teammates at the University of Pittsburgh together too. So Rashad Weaver was teammates with DeMar Hamlin. And as you said, obviously an emotional time for him and anybody that knows DeMar Hamlin.
And a very... Did you see this whole scene in the locker room yesterday, Michelle? Michelle was in there, yeah.
Yes.
So we were around Rashad Weaver, and a few questions. I mean, it was, you know, a big group. I got there late, and, you know, he was talking about him, and then I don't remember the exact question. I think it was Jimmy who asked him something, you know, like basically just how are you getting through this, and he was very emotional and broke down crying, and it was kind of like, okay, just leave him alone. So we all walked away. I mean, you just leave a guy alone. He was, you know, he's got cameras in his face, and this is a guy he signed with at Pittsburgh. He was with him the whole time. He said he talks to him once a week. You know, I mean, it's a close friend. And so then all of a sudden there was some yelling because a local TV cameraman they thought was like sort of taking video of Weaver sort of from afar, like sort of like nonchalant, you know, like sort of like, you know, without, you know, like basically to get, you know, footage of him crying without, you know, having the permission to do it. So some other players were yelling at him, and then they were asking him to show him, and he said he wasn't filming, and I don't know the result of it, but boy, it was not a good scene.
No question about that. So we'll continue to hope for the best for DeMar Hamlin and continue to pray for him. Obviously, as we talked about, the report from Cam Wolf last night and others about the oxygen now down to 50% in terms of him relying on that, that is a positive development. Hoping for more positive developments as the day goes on today with DeMar Hamlin. We'll continue the discussion and taking your thoughts at 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. We'll look ahead to the Titans and the Jaguars coming up next. Could Saturday be a turning point in the Titans franchise? We'll get to that next. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063 The Game. Looking ahead to the Titans and the Jaguars coming up on Saturday Night Football for a winner-take-all game in the AFC South. And throwing the question out there, how big of a turning point could this be for the Titans and their franchise on Saturday against the Jags? 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. Zach in Nashville says, Amy Adams shrunk firing Vrabel would be a horrible move, but she has the Adams gene, and she publicly loved Mularkey and fired him for sticking with a bad OC. She loved J-Rob and gave him an extension. She can say she loves Vrabel, but she didn't look happy Thursday night football versus the Cowboys, and a 7-game losing streak can't make her happy at all. I'm not saying it's going to happen or I want it to happen, but there's that possibility that the Adams gene kicks in. This from Zach from Nashville on the text line.
I'm thinking like the Adams family, and then what did Dennis had the Wednesday Adams?
Yes, the Wednesday. Yes,
illustration.
That was good. Yeah.
Hey, look.
I mean, look.
I can't. I don't know what's going to happen.
I don't know.
Yeah, I have no idea. I mean, I take this again not as a traditional bad football movie script. Knifing in the back or anything, but I do take it as I trust this guy more than this guy. Now, to me, the smart move would be to continue to trust both, or at least wait until after this is all over to evaluate, but that ship has sailed. Yeah, I hear you. I don't know what's going to happen. I'll be very surprised, and that's less emphatic than the whole, oh, my God, John Robinson's not in the hot seat. Would you stop it? So, I mean, yeah, believe me, I'm pumping the brakes on shaming any take on what Amy Adams Strong might do.
Well, I threw it out there in the last segment. You know, based on her comments, hasn't she kind of already told us how she feels about the roster and what that could look like this offseason? And Keith is kind of at least throwing out there maybe the opposite approach and says, or she just could be more aggressive and going for it again next year. I mean, she did talk about wanting more and wanting to be a Super Bowl contender. Does that mean tearing it down and trying to get there that way? Or does that mean being hyper-aggressive this offseason and trying to make some big moves and get back to being in Super Bowl contention? I have no idea what it means, but that is the other side of the way things can go that Keith threw out there.
No, that's a good point. The question I would have to that is what is the, like, given your limitations, because yes, the cap is real, despite what 4 hours of bloviating in the afternoon may tell you, it does exist. So
bloviating is a very underused term.
The cap does exist.
By the way, Caroline yesterday on the show used tertiary. I immediately texted her all caps, like, tertiary, that is a badass word
It's an LSU education.
Yeah, that's right. But it is real, and so the Titans have some limitations on how hyper-aggressive can you be. You were hyper-aggressive with Julio, which, again, I supported that move. Didn't work out, but it put you in a bind where you had to extend Tannehill and increase his cap hit down the road, and then you had to get rid of a second-round pick. And so what is the hyper-aggressive move? I mean,
it would be Brady, wouldn't it?
I guess. And then how do you make that work? You still have $18 million in dead money with Tannehill if you move him.
Yep.
Or if you cut him. Now, could you move Tannehill is an interesting one. I don't, the Jets sort of narrative around that team, and I tend to agree with it, is like they actually have quite a few pretty good things in place.
They do.
And they had just no quarterback. I mean, Mike White's a nice story, but we've kind of
seen. He's not a starting quarterback.
Yeah, what you see with a lot of these things is, and maybe we'll see it with Brock Purdy, maybe we won't, but a lot of times you see a couple good weeks, and then it's like, okay, that's why this quarterback went where he went or whatever. So would the Jets, would Tannehill, that's the thing, would they view, I mean, if you're looking from afar and you don't watch him closely, which, of course, it's their job to know everything if you're actually talking about a move like this, but like a Jets fan would probably look at him and say, Tannehill?
Yeah.
He threw 3 picks in the playoffs last year. What has he ever done? Why would he be the answer? I happen to think that he's good. He's not the answer. The playoff thing is real, but I don't know. That could potentially, give you an out if you could actually trade him to somebody. But yeah, be hyper aggressive. Again, it's just like, okay, try to fix your offensive line in one offseason with a lot of different spots to fix.
Well, to that point, I mean, Keith from Bowling Green says, I think if they fix the offensive line and pick up a receiver, I think they'd be all right. I mean, my question is, I hear that, is it possible to fix this offensive line in one offseason? Because I don't know. I mean, you've got a left tackle situation you got to figure out. Maybe it is Taylor Lewan. To me, you've got a left guard situation you got to figure out. And then there's the center position. Like, is Ben Jones coming back? Is Ben Jones going to be here next year? And then you've got to sign Nate Davis to a contract extension. I mean, I feel good, I guess, about Nicholas Petit-Frere being your right tackle next year based on where you drafted him. But, like, there's a lot to figure out on the offensive line.
And I don't know. I mean, I don't know how good he's going to be. But obviously, you hope he takes a step. Petit-Frere, I mean, I think it's been overall a rookie year that suggests he could be good. Nate Davis had a lot of health stuff.
Yes.
And, yeah, Ben Jones. I mean, look, I thought Ben Jones was probably going to retire after last season. That's another one of those where I'm just like, you know what? I don't know. But Aaron Brewer at center, Dylan Radins at left guard.
Well, like some
keep Nate Davis, Nicholas Petit-Frere, and then you draft a left tackle along with possibly Lewan on a pay cut. What kind of offensive line is that?
I mean, it's better than what you got right now. I don't think there's any question about that.
But I think you have to have another interior guy too.
Well, you got to have another interior guy, and I'll stand by this. Like, I think the more and more I think about it, trying to get Lewan back in here on a shorter term deal with less money makes sense. Number one, does he want to do that? Because we don't know the answer to that. He may not want to do that. And number two, even if you do that, to me, you still have to draft a left tackle at some point. Like, you can't count on him being healthy next
year. Oh, for sure. No, you absolutely do. I mean, I still think that, like, your first pick. It's interesting, too, because you could look at the first pick and say, you got to get your best left tackle. You could also say, you got to get a difference-making receiver. But if you're moving on from Bud Dupree, which there's some dead money there, but, I mean, they can do it now.
Yeah.
You also need to draft an edge.
Yeah,
you know, absolutely. You really do.
Yeah. I mean, look, the list of positions that the Titans need to draft right now is pretty long, which is part of why we're having this conversation and part of why we're in this position of what we're talking about right now. But, I mean, there's a lot of work they got to do this offseason. And like you said, I think they need a couple of guys at wide receiver. They certainly need one, whether that's – they need one legit weapon at wide receiver, whether that comes via free agency or in the draft. Like, I feel good about Burks being a good player for you right now. Have we seen enough out of Burks to make me think he's going to be a number one receiver? Not yet with me. Now, that doesn't mean he can't get there, but there's a lot of help.
He's
they
a
need
keeper,
wide receiver.
Though.
Hey, for, yeah. Sure, sure. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, there's no question about that. He's going to be on the team, and he should be, and all that stuff next year. But, like, they need a lot of help at wide receiver, yeah. Not just one guy.
And this is, again, I mean, look, Burks is a keeper. I think Burks is going to be a good player. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know how good, but this is, again, where it's almost pointless to say, but, like, if you just had A.J. Brown, like, you'd be – yes, you would be paying him. I get that. And you have to pay Simmons. But, you know, the cap is real. The cap is stretchable. But you look at all these things, and that's where you can make the case, you know what, this is why you need a year to try to go young and cheap and hope you make – you know, you have someone in here. And maybe Ryan Cowden, you know, will be the GM. I don't know. I mean, I think he has to be considered, you know, someone has a chance. That would be continuity. I would also, I guess, question, like, okay, it's like the same thing with, like, Trotz being fired. And,
yeah.
You know, it's like, if you like that, the overall philosophy and everything, then why did you fire the person who spearheaded it? I don't know. But anyway, whoever it is, maybe it's just that, like, go young, go cheap. Get geared up for a, you know, have that cap room, like the Colts carried out that cap room for a year, then have gear up for one big offseason and maybe hope that you can draft an actual franchise quarterback soon.
Titans in Truth on the text line says, the pressure is all on the Titans, and this game could be franchise-altering. The new GM could do to Vrabel the same thing that was done to Mularkey, either fire the OC or you're gone. If the Titans lose, all bets are off and nobody is safe. Even invincible Vrabel. That's from Titans in Truth on the text line. Invincible Vrabel.
Wow.
I feel like there's some shots being taken at Vrabel there by Titans in Truth.
Sorry. So I knew we'd get to this. Devin from Dover. I may be in the minority here, but winning AFC South title is not what I care about. If you're not competing legitimately for Super Bowls, it's pointless. You'd be better off losing this game and getting a better draft pick and helping this roster for whatever that gets this team back to the Super Bowl. Look, Super Bowl, I agree. Better off losing this game so you can have a couple higher ticks on the draft board. I don't understand it. I mean, just be careful what you wish for. Because if you're like, oh, yes, we're picking 11th after you lose this game, I mean, I don't know when the next time you're going to get a playoff game.
Also, and Jared brought this up the other day, and I agree with it, which, again, is a scary place to be. Have we really reached the point with the Titans where people are like, oh, yeah, well, who cares about the playoffs in the division? Like there's some long history of the Titans making the playoffs.
They've never done this.
Yeah.
They've never done what they would do if they win Saturday. And I know it was 2 months of, well, they've won the division, it's over. But, like, they've never won it 3 years in a row. It's never been done. So that, no, whatever. I agree. They're not a Super Bowl contender without Tannehill at quarterback.
They're not
probably
with
him at quarterback. But is there no value in that? Okay.
LD from McMinnville says, if the Titans can figure out left tackle, left guard, center, right guard, right tackle, wide receiver two, tight end, cornerback, linebacker, and kicker, they should be good. This is from LD from McMinnville on the text line. I think it lays it out pretty well.
It's not every offensive line spot, I don't think.
It is a lot of them. 615-737-1025. 615-737-1025. We'll continue this discussion. Got more of your thoughts to get to. We'll also get into Josh Dobbs and the impression that he's made on his Titans teammates coming up next as well. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, The Game. Looking ahead to the Titans and the Jaguars coming up on Saturday Night Football for a winner-take-all game in the AFC South. And throwing the question out there, how big of a turning point could this be for the Titans and their franchise on Saturday against the Jags? 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. Zach in Nashville says, Amy Adams Strunk firing Vrabel would be a horrible move, but she has the Adams gene, and she publicly loved Malarkey and fired him for sticking with a bad OC. She loved J-Rob and gave him an extension. She can say she loves Vrabel, but she didn't look happy Thursday Night Football versus the Cowboys, and a 7-game losing streak can't make her happy at all. I'm not saying it's going to happen or I want it to happen, but there's that possibility that the Adams gene kicks in. This is from Zach from Nashville on the text line.
I'm thinking, like, the Adams family, and then what did that? Dennis had the Wednesday Adams.
Yes, the Wednesday. Yes.
Illustration.
That was good.
Yeah. Hey, look.
I mean, look.
I can't. I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know. Yeah. I have no idea. I take this, again, not as a traditional bad football movie script, knifing in the back or anything. But I do take it as – I trust this guy more than this guy. Now, to me, the smart move would be to continue to trust both, or at least wait until after this is all over to evaluate. But that ship has sailed. Yeah, I hear you. I don't know what's going to happen. I'll be very surprised. And that's less emphatic than the whole, oh, my God, John Robinson's not in the hot seat. Would you stop it? So, I mean, yeah, believe me, I'm pumping the brakes on shaming any take on what Amy Adams Strunk might do.
Well, I threw it out there in the last segment. You know, based on her comments, hasn't she kind of already told us how she feels about the roster and what that could look like this offseason? And Keith is kind of at least throwing out there maybe the opposite approach and says, or she just could be more aggressive and going for it again next year. I mean, she did talk about wanting more and wanting to be a Super Bowl contender. Does that mean tearing it down and trying to get there that way? Or does that mean being hyper-aggressive this offseason and trying to make some big moves and get back to being in Super Bowl contention? I have no idea what it means, but But that is the other side of the way things can go that Keith threw out there.
No, and that's a good point. The question I would have to that is what is the, like, given your limitations, because yes, the cap is real, despite what 4 hours of bloviating in the afternoon may tell you, it does exist.
Bloviating is a very underused term.
The cap does exist.
By the way, Caroline yesterday on the show used tertiary. And I immediately texted her all caps, like, tertiary? That is a badass word right there.
It's an LSU education.
Yeah, that's right. It is real. And so the Titans have some limitations on how hyper-aggressive can you be. You were hyper-aggressive with Julio, which, again, I supported that move. Didn't work out, but it put you in a bind where you had to extend Tannehill and increase his cap hit down the road, and then you had to get rid of a second-round pick. And so what is the hyper-aggressive move? I mean,
it would be Brady, wouldn't it?
I guess. And then how do you make that work? You still have $18 million in dead money with Tannehill if you move him.
Yep.
Or if you cut him. Now, could you move Tannehill is an interesting one. I don't – you know, the Jets sort of narrative around that team, and I tend to agree with it, is like they actually have quite a few pretty good things in place.
They do.
And they have just no quarterback. I mean, Mike White's a nice story, but we've kind of
seen – he's not a starting quarterback.
Yeah, what you see with a lot of these things is – and maybe we'll see it with Brock Purdy. Maybe we won't. But a lot of times you see a couple good weeks, and then it's like, okay, that's why – this quarterback went where he went or whatever. So would the Jets, would Tannehill, that's the thing, would they view, I mean, if you're looking from afar and you don't watch him closely, which of course it's their job to know everything if you're actually talking about a move like this, but like a Jets fan would probably look at him and say, Tannehill?
Yeah.
He threw three picks in the playoffs last year. What has he ever done? Why would he be the answer? I happen to think that he's good. He's not the answer. The playoff thing is real, but I don't know. That could potentially, you know, give you an out if you could actually trade him to somebody. But yeah, be hyper aggressive. Again, it's just like, okay, try to fix your offensive line in one offseason with a lot of different spots to fix.
Well, to that point, I mean, Keith from Bowling Green says, I think if they fix the offensive line and pick up a receiver, I think they'd be all right. I mean, my question is, I hear that. Is it possible to fix this offensive line in one offseason? Because I don't know. I mean, you've got a left tackle situation you got to figure out. Maybe it is Taylor Lewan. To me, you've got a left guard situation you got to figure out. And then there's the center position. Like, is Ben Jones coming back? Is Ben Jones going to be here next year? And then you've got to sign Nate Davis to a contract extension. I mean, I feel good, I guess, about Nicholas Petit-Frere being your right tackle next year based on where you drafted him. But, like, there's a lot to figure out on the offensive line.
And I don't know. I mean, I don't know how good he's going to be. But obviously, you hope he takes a step. Petit-Frere, I mean, I think it's been overall a rookie year that suggests he could be good. Nate Davis had a lot of health stuff.
Yes.
And, yeah, Ben Jones. I thought Ben Jones was probably going to retire after last season. That's another one of those where I'm just like, you know what? I don't know. But Aaron Brewer at center, Dylan Radins at left guard.
Well, like some
keep Nate Davis, Nicholas Petit-Frere, and then you draft a left tackle along with possibly Lewan on a pay cut. And what kind of offensive line is that?
I mean, it's better than what you got right now. I don't think there's any question about that.
But I think you have to have another interior guy too.
Well, you got to have another interior guy, and I'll stand by this. Like, I think the more and more I think about it, trying to get Lewan back in here on a shorter-term deal with less money makes sense. Number one, does he want to do that? Because we don't know the answer to that. He may not want to do that. And number two, even if you do that, to me, you still have to draft a left tackle at some point. Like, you can't count on him being healthy next
year. Oh, for sure. No, you absolutely do. I mean, I still think that, like, your first pick – it's interesting, too, because you could look at the first pick and say, you got to get your best left tackle. You could also say – you got to get a difference-making receiver. But if you're moving on from Bud Dupree, which there's some dead money there, but, I mean, they can do it now.
Yeah.
You also need to draft an edge.
Yeah.
You know, absolutely. You really do.
Yeah. I mean, look, the list of positions that the Titans need to draft right now is pretty long, which is part of why we're having this conversation and part of why we're in this position of what we're talking about right now. But, I mean, there's a lot of work they got to do this offseason. And like you said, they need – I think they need a couple of guys at wide receiver. They certainly need one, whether that's – they need one legit weapon at wide receiver, whether that comes via free agency or in the draft. Like, I feel good about Burks being a good player for you right now. Have we seen enough out of Burks to make me think he's going to be a number one receiver? Not yet with me. Now, that doesn't mean he can't get there, but –
But
there's a lot of help.
He's
they
a
need
keeper,
wide receiver.
Though.
Hey, for, yeah. Sure, sure. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, there's no question about that. He's going to be on the team, and he should be, and all that stuff next year. But, like, they need a lot of help at wide receiver. Yeah. Not just one guy.
And this is, again, I mean, look, Burks is a keeper. I think Burks is going to be a good player. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know how good. But this is, again, where it's almost pointless to say, but like if you just had AJ Brown, like you know, like you'd be, yes, you would be paying him. I get that, and you have to pay Simmons, but you know the cap is real. The cap is stretchable, but you look at all these things, and that's where you can make the case. You know what? This is why you need a year to try to go young and cheap, and hope you make. You know, you have someone in here, and maybe Ryan Cowden. You know, will be the GM. I don't know. I mean, I think he has to be considered, you know, someone has a chance. That would be continuity. I would also, I guess, question, like, okay. It's like the same thing with, like, Trotz being fired. And,
yeah.
You know, it's like, if you like that, the overall philosophy and everything, then why did you fire the person who spearheaded it? I don't know. But anyway, whoever it is, maybe it's just that, like, go young, go cheap. Get geared up for a, you know, have that cap room like the Colts carried out that cap room for a year, and then have gear up for one big offseason and maybe hope that you can draft an actual franchise quarterback soon.
Titans in Truth on the text line says the pressure is all on the Titans and this game could be franchise altering. The new GM could do to Vrabel the same thing that was done to Mularkey. Either fire the OC or you're gone. If the Titans lose, all bets are off and nobody is safe. Even Invincible Vrabel. That's from Titans in Truth on the text line. Invincible Vrabel.
Wow.
I feel like there's some shots being taken at Vrabel there by Titans in Truth. Vrabel.
Sorry. So I knew we'd get to this. Devin from Dover. I may be in the minority here, but winning AFC South title is not what I care about. If you're not competing legitimately for Super Bowls, it's pointless. You'd be better off losing this game and getting a better draft pick and helping this roster for whatever that gets this team back to the Super Bowl. Look, Super Bowl, I agree. Better off losing this game so you can have a couple higher ticks on the draft board. I don't understand it. I mean, just be careful what you wish for. Because if you're like, oh, yes, we're picking 11th after you lose this game, I mean, I don't know when the next time you're going to get a playoff game.
Also, and Jared brought this up the other day, and I agree with it, which, again, is a scary place to be. Have we really reached the point with the Titans where people are like, oh, yeah, well, who cares about the playoffs in the division? Like there's some long history of the Titans making the playoffs.
They've never done this.
Yeah.
They've never done what they would do if they win Saturday. And I know it was 2 months of, well, they've won the division. It's over. But, like, they've never won it 3 years in a row. It's never been done. So that, no, whatever. I agree. They're not a Super Bowl contender without Tannehill at quarterback.
They're not
probably
with
him at quarterback. But is there no value in that? Okay.
LD from McMinnville says if the Titans can figure out left tackle, left guard, center, right guard, right tackle, wide receiver two, tight end, cornerback, linebacker, and kicker, they should be good. This from LD from McMinnville on the text line. I think it lays it out pretty well.
It's not every offensive line spot, I don't think.
It is a lot of them. 615-737-1025. 615-737-1025. We'll continue this discussion. Got more of your thoughts to get to. We'll also get into Josh Dobbs and the impression that he's made on his Titans teammates coming up next as well. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.